Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. You only have to follow the local news for a day or two to know that our state is in the midst of an earthquake swarm, averaging about one 2.0 earthquake a day over the first month and a half of 2014, and close to 1,000 events over the past 5 years. Well, given the increased energy production and the use of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, suspicions have fallen on the energy industry. But my guest, who is a member of a special committee convened by the National Academy of Sciences and Engineering and the National Research Council, found no seismic risk in fracking itself, but that wastewater injection wells, quote, do pose some risk for induced seismicity, unquote. Donald Clark is a consulting petroleum geologist for a number of oil companies and teaches at the University of Southern California. He's published 3 geological guidebooks and more than 60 papers and abstracts and has been featured in documentaries on the Discovery Channel and the National Geographic Channel. He'll be giving the Petroleum Geologist Distinguished Ethic Lecture today at noon at the Allen Chapman Activity Center on the University of Tulsa campus on hydraulic fracturing and earthquakes. Ethically, how do we move forward and do the right thing? He'll be speaking again today at noon, and it's free and open to the public. Donald Clark joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Donald Clark, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
You're giving the Geosciences Distinguished Ethic Lecture today and looking at hydraulic fracturing and earthquakes and what causal links there are between the two. And I think here in Oklahoma right now, we're in the midst of a major earthquake swarm when you look at our recent geologic history. When I say recent, I mean like a snapshot in the terms of Earth age. But, you know, we've 3 or 4 earthquakes in a year was a major year. And then about 5 years ago, it moved above 10. And now we're in the hundreds. And this year, we've already had about 60 earthquakes. And if that trend continues, we're looking at more at 400 in a year. And I know this is happening in many other places where energy extraction is happening, North Dakota, Arkansas, Ohio. What's going on here? What linkage is there between energy extraction and these small earthquakes that seem to be popping up?
What's been happening is very much a surprise to everybody, especially since, you know, 2009, with having many hundreds of events happening in Oklahoma, especially central Oklahoma, with the largest event being in Prague. That was a rather large, surprising event, and probably I think it was the largest event in recorded history for Oklahoma. There is a lot of water injection, what we call class 2 water injection, and this is where they take the brines from oil fields and stuff, and they dispose of the water in the ground. And it is thought, and also it's being studied right now, and I'm not going to tell you this is absolutely the case, but it's thought that a lot of this water going into the ground, supposedly into the Arbuckle Formation, is going into the ground, and that the ground is saturated and the pore pressure is increasing. Now, what I mean by there is when you take the fluid and you put it in the ground, there's already fluid in the ground, so you're increasing the pressure in the ground. And when the pressure is increased under certain conditions, okay, you can generate an earthquake. Now, let's be specific on how this would be. If I have a fault system going through, there's a coefficient of friction that stops the fault from moving. So it'd be like pushing your hands together and trying to slide them. They stick. But if I ease up the pressure a little bit, which is what I would do with increasing the pore pressure, it can suddenly slip a little bit. Okay? So that increase in pore pressure under the stress field that exists in the ground could result in a small earthquake. Now, it takes more than just that, okay? It takes the idea of having porosity, which are the holes in the rock, and permeability, the ability of a fluid to actually flow through the holes in the rock. If I put a lot of pressure in and it can't dissipate, okay, that stays there for a long time, and the stress field changes. It could be tidal motion, it could be an earthquake somewhere else that could trigger this. You could get small events. So to study this, the scientists need the amount of fluid that's put in the ground, the area of the ground that has been studied. They need to know the pore pressure in the ground, calculate that. And by doing that, they can estimate what type of an event could happen, possibly. And this is all work that is in progress right now. The Oklahoma Geological Survey, USGS, are working on this, as they are in other states. And I think the study is going very good.
Now, to be clear, what you just said, basically and this is what you found on this committee that you served on with the National Academy of Research and National Academy of Science and Engineering, which looked at whether this activity was causing induced seismicity. You found that the idea of horizontal drilling, what we call fracking, there was no link.
That's true.
What you found, a link, a possible link, I think is what you refer to it, as the wastewater injection from these wells being put back into the area of the well and left there. That's where the risk is?
Hydraulic fracturing, per se, is you go down to the formation, you put a lateral, which is a sideways well, into the formation, and you crack the rocks a little bit. You leave a little proppant behind. That's a little something to hold the cracks open. And then you produce out the water. Okay, when the water is produced out, that water can be used for another well. Eventually, you want to dispose of it. Okay, and that goes to a Class II water disposal well. Oklahoma has many of those around. Now, the frack job is a one-time, so it may be a high volume of fluid going into the ground, but it's once. Once it's done with that well, that's it. You move on. But with a water injection well, Class II water injection well, you're putting water in the ground continually. You're not taking it back out. So with oil field, you tend to balance with secondary recovery and stuff. You put fluids in, take them out, but you try to keep the reservoir pressures about the same, and that's good. And because of that, the committee found that oil industry induced very, very few earthquakes. Water disposal wells may have induced more, and further study is needed.
Now, you said the idea is to keep the pressure about the same in fracking. If you get the pressures wrong, could that induce a seismic event, or would that be pretty rare and pretty bad work on the case of the company doing the drilling?
Yeah, when you go in and frack, in theory, you know how much pressure you're putting in. You're monitoring your fracture job. So in other words, you're putting the pressure on, and it creates microseismums. These are little tiny earthquakes. I'll give you an idea. A microseismum of -2 magnitude is about 3 feet by 3 feet of rock moving. Okay, it's very, very small. You can't even feel it at the surface. Matter of fact, you have to get an earthquake of about a magnitude 3 before you can feel it at the surface. And when I say magnitude, I'm talking about moment magnitude. That's the amount of energy released. So this is very similar to the old Richter scale, but moment magnitude is what we use now. So you go in and you do the frack job. If you lose your pressure, so your frack fluids go somewhere else, the pressure drops because you've just essentially spilled it because you have a container you're putting this into. So it's not too often it's going to go greater. Now, where you can build up pressure over time based on volume going into the rock, okay, at some time or another, if it's like blowing up a balloon. You blow up a balloon, eventually it pops, the same thing. You can build up pressure till it fracks or till you've got control. With a water injection well, the pressure will build up, it'll back up to them, and they can't put as much water in the hole anymore. They'll keep the same pressure. Now, if they increase the pressure, you can see they're causing a potential danger with that. But the idea is to actually monitor that very carefully.
Now, the energy industry, when all these first reports about fracking and this whole unconventional energy recovery and disposal of water started, they said, we've been doing this for years, and it's never been a problem. Has there been anything that's changed in the way the energy industry is, say, disposing of wastewater today as opposed to the past?
You've got multiple questions there.
Yeah.
We'll start with a long history. Hydrofracking, as we know it today, was developed in 1947. There have been over 1 million hydrofracture jobs done in the country since then, with very few significant problems. The horizontal wells have been drilled for a long time. But combining these two to go into a rock which was considered source rock in the past, this is the rock that produced the oil migrated to a reservoir rock, but the source rock is now the target, so it's the source rock and the reservoir rock. You put these wells actually into this, and you fracture these formations, which increases the surface area contact so that the gases can come through these little cracks and come out. So that's the big change. That's a big change, and these have been unbelievably successful. Matter of fact, if you go by daily production, the daily production increase in the last 2 years has been equivalent to what the entire country of Nigeria contributes to the world oil market, which is absolutely remarkable, and that's happening around here. So the unconventional has been absolutely a phenomenal boon. But with it, there's a lot of water that's produced, and more water is going into the ground. And like anything else, the ground is a container, and once you fill it up, it's full. And you have to watch that, and it can dissipate out. Some places it doesn't. Let me use an example on this. When I pump water into, and I'll use the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, Denver, Colorado, for this example. 1962, the Army wanted to get rid of some nasty fluids. They decided they would put them into crystalline rock, basement rock that was crystalline rock, and it would disappear forever. Nobody would ever see it. We have that same kind of basement crystalline rock underneath most of Oklahoma. So it's below the Arbuckle. So you inject down into this rock, and the rock has a very limited space. It's very hard. It has no porosity, no permeability, except for fractures. Now you're building up this pore pressure along the fractures. And it doesn't lubricate the fractures, mind you. What it does is it eases up the pressure. So the pressure put down that stops it, which would be gravity or the weight of the rocks above, is now eased a little bit, and you can get a small amount of movement. And this is what happened to the Rocky Mountain Arsenal in 1962. By the time they had this totally figured out, it was about 1965 or 1966.
And there were all these earthquakes.
And they had swarms of earthquakes. They were small earthquakes, never very large ones. And these would go again. They'd reduce the amount of water underground, and you know it would go away. There is a thought out that only so much water can go into the ground, and that's it. But all in all, usually it leaks somewhere, dissipates over time. So your injection rates are very important. If you inject it too rapidly, it can't equalize. And you'll cause
now,
problems.
Most of our earthquakes here in Oklahoma have been in the 3 to 4 range. Occasionally, there's been a couple of fives, which is a good shake. And I think if you ask most Oklahomans today, they say, well, you know, if the economy's booming because, you know, we're selling oil, you know, it's helping the economy, they could probably tolerate 3 and 4s. But I think there's a great amount of uncertainty among Oklahomans. Well, is this going to just get worse? Because they, you know, seemingly every time you have a big one, it's like, well, that seems to be bigger than the last one before. Was there anything in your committee work that says that there is an upper limit, or is it a matter of how much water is being forced down into the earth?
We were not able to find an upper limit, but since then, we made recommendations that people study stuff. Since then, there have been some people that make some studies over at the USGS, for example. I think A. McGar had done this, that came up with an idea that with a certain amount of fluid in, you would get a maximum earthquake. And this was just published within the last 2 weeks, so it's not out yet.
But I did see the little graph, and it's basically just a straight V graph. The more water you put in there, the more tendency you're going to have to see earthquakes, and the more water, the greater the severity, although I think there was a limit.
Yeah. I think the Prague, Oklahoma event was the highest, biggest event on the thing. It was their extreme example. But they even gave the qualifier. They weren't sure that that was exactly what happened, that it may be a triggered event from other things that were going on at the same time.
Yeah. My guest today is Donald Clark. He's a petroleum geologist that teaches at the University of Southern California. He also served on the National Academy of Sciences and Engineering's Committee on Induced Seismicity Potential in Energy Technology, basically looking at whether energy technologies and new extraction techniques were increasing the possibility of earthquakes. And what they found was that fracking, actually hydraulic fracturing wasn't, but wastewater disposal did see an increased risk. He's giving the Petroleum Geologist Distinguished Ethics Lecture today at noon at the Alan Chapman Activity Center on the University of Tulsa campus. Well, is the feeling of the committee and the feeling of most researchers today that no matter how much water you put in on a disposal well, there's an upper limit to the size of the earthquake potential?
There are places where they say you're putting water into a vacuum that just takes water. As much, as fast as you put it down, it disappears. And there are other places where you're running into crystalline basement, like the Rocky Mountain Arsenal or Youngstown, Ohio, which is a famous case that happened on Christmas Eve 2 years ago, where they're putting it into a very limited environment that is restrictive. And because of that, you shouldn't do that. It definitely induces earthquakes.
Now, the third thing that you studied was looking at carbon sequestration. Now, I assume for those who don't know what, you know, this carbon sequestration is, what is this technique?
The idea is to take carbon out of the atmosphere and inject it into the ground, into a place where it's not going to bother us anymore.
This is like carbon dioxide?
So it's carbon dioxide.
Okay. So this is gas and injecting it into the earth.
Right. And what you do is you compress it supercritical. It goes into the ground, not as dry ice, but as a liquid. It goes deep into the ground, and hopefully you've got a large reservoir that can dissipate into it. I think the biggest process going now is Sleipner in Norway. And basically what you do is you capture CO2, you compress it, you put it in the ground, and hopefully it stays in the ground. The oil industry has used CO2 to enhance oil recovery. You can go miscible where it dissolves into the oil. It makes the oil more liquid, and you get more oil produced that way. What the committee found that was a little bit unnerving to us was that we really don't know what's going to happen to all that CO2 in the ground. Is it going to react with the formations? Is it going to create carbonic acid? Is it going to work its way around and come out of some way or another, some other place? Our feelings were that more studies should be performed on that.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't make any findings, or just the fact that it was just, we don't know enough to know whether we should be doing it or not?
Well, that was our feeling, is we didn't know enough. We felt that more studies should be performed than that, and that was all. It was essentially passing on that, you know, this needs to be looked at. This is beyond the scope of this committee to look at this further. We were given 1 year to study everything, come up with our conclusions, and publish it.
Now, one of the things that's been somewhat unnerving about the earthquake swarm in Oklahoma has been, and I think you alluded to this earlier, it reacts with faults, the wastewater disposal. Now, we know there's a fault in southwestern Oklahoma, the Mears Fault, and there's another one around the Arbuckles. But a lot of these things are happening up in north-central Oklahoma and places where there's a lot of drilling, but we really didn't know there were faults there. Is this just very small, minute faults in the ground that these fluids are reacting with, or is there something else in play?
A lot of times we don't know what the actual faulting is underground. We just don't have enough data points to see it. You know, the few wells that penetrated and stuff like that. You can't tell. So the basement formations, the crystalline rock that has very little porosity and permeability to it but does have fractures, we're not quite sure of the shape of it. There's some work going on right here at the University of Tulsa that is actually studying that right now and looking and finding out that the faults as we see them underground are quite different than what has been published in the past, which is a big surprise. Let me give you an example. The Paradox Basin on the western side of Colorado has a beautiful river that goes through it, and they had produced this briny solution. They wanted to get rid of it. So they went right down to the basement rock, again, crystalline-type rock, shot it into the ground, and several miles away, they had earthquakes. That was interesting. They had to stop it. More earthquakes miles away. It didn't happen so much right there, though they had a little bit of events. And what it was is there was an unknown fault system that went through the basement and showed up somewhere else, and they had overpressured that. So like Rocky Mountain Arsenal, Youngstown, Paradox Basin, there are a number of these cases where this has happened. And I suspect Oklahoma is underlain by a number of faults and fault systems that the current geologists are going to start trying to work out.
Well, the subject of your lecture is where do we go from here? We have this, what we think is a causal link between wastewater disposal and induced earthquakes or induced seismicity. What is the ethical position going forward? Is it lump it and live with it? or does there need to be some serious regulations on how you dispose of wastewater? I know I was just hearing about a little earthquake swarm around the DFW airport. When they quit putting the wastewater in, the earthquake stopped. Is it that simple as well? If we don't want seismic activity?
Yeah, so Dallas-Fort Worth, that was also advanced. We actually have that well covered in our article, or our book. What you need to do is understand that, okay, sometimes you have to put a little more water in, a little less, see if things change, see if there's sensitivity to it. At the same time, you need to study it. For example, it's good to know how much fluid has been put into the ground and at what rates it's put into the ground. It's good to know formation pressures and things. If I recall correctly, Oklahoma doesn't require them to record how much fluid goes into the ground. I think that's better for everybody. It's not just the regulator is imposing an unreasonable rule on the operators, but it'd be a good idea to know what's going in, just for everybody's sake. So you need to collect data. You need to have a repository for the data. It could be the Oklahoma Geological Survey. Our report recommended the United States Geological Survey. That way it'd be available for a greater number of people evaluate. You have some of the best scientists in the world in Oklahoma. You know, those are the people that need to look at this, study it. I think most of it's going to be logical.
Mm-hmm. And so it won't be a matter of eliminating wastewater disposals, but it'd be more of knowing how much water you're putting in and doing it in a slower process to make sure you're not causing earthquakes?
Well,
or what? What exactly? I'm a layman here.
Yeah. Well, our recommendations are that the regulators and people should work with the producers or the other parties. And what they need to do is set up a very simple system. It's a green light, yellow light, red light. Green light means you go in, you set the rules ahead of time, that the person needs to deal with the public, be open with it, let the people know what's going on, whether it be a fracture job in a well or a water injection well. Let them know what's going on, keep things going, and go ahead with your project. And go at the rates you set. Now, if there's no problem whatsoever, you may want to increase your rates of injection. If this is a water injection well, that's fine, okay, up to whatever the limits are. If there is a problem, you go into yellow light. You say, whoa, hold back a little bit. Put in a little less. Let's see if these events continue. Now, there's some thought that these events could continue up to 10 years into the future, okay? But in this case, most of the time, it's pretty quick. You see what's going on. And it pull back and say, oh, yeah, okay, that's working. And we can continue at yellow light and then, again, slowly increase. Now, if the events continue, it's red light. You stop right now. No more. That's it. You're done. Now, that's good for a number of ways. If you're the operator, you now know risk. You know how to judge the risk because when this thing happens, that's it. Now, that is a very good way to watch it. And let me deal with something else. This is slightly off subject. Risk and hazard. There's a hazard. It's something that if you touch it, you're going to blow yourself up. Okay? But if that hazard is out in the middle of nowhere where nobody will ever go, it's not much of a risk, is it?
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is you have a hazard and you have to weigh the risk. If we have magnitude 4 earthquakes happening in Tulsa, right downtown, that's upsetting to everybody.
And okay? That's a substantial risk, not only to the population, but also to the operator because
that's correct.
We're having new research which shows that there is a link.
Yes. But if the same event happened way out in the country, it's not really much of a risk to anybody. You know, it's so those are also things. So where you are, what it is, what's going on, these are all important factors that all need to be considered.
Now, in general, are wastewater disposal wells done in very remote areas, or are they done near significant human populations, or is it a mixed bag?
I think it's somewhat of a mixed bag. I was in Ohio yesterday meeting with them on it, and they have 200 water injection wells in the whole state, and they buy water, or actually take water from other states because there's a lot of money in that. Oklahoma is another state that has many, many water wells. Now, here's another thing is with water wells all over, injection wells, class 2 injection wells all over the state, if there is an event, it's going to be close to a water injection well no matter what. You just can't be far from one. So you can instantly say, aha, those are connected because they're close together. It may not have anything to do with it.
Just as you were talking about in Colorado where the earthquakes happen miles away.
That's right, in Paradox Valley. It just...
Are there states out there with really good regulation of wastewater, or is this an evolving sort of piece of regulation for every state?
Yeah, the wastewater regulations through EPA mostly, and it is evolving. We made a number of recommendations, and it looks like a good chunk of the country are starting to react and come up with new regulations, ways to deal with stuff. I think Oklahoma's been proactive. What we did find is when these events occurred that the local, state, and federal agencies worked very well together. For example, Oklahoma had very few seismographs over the state. Okay, which meant it was very difficult to locate these events because it takes at least 4 stations to get an accurate location. And the bigger the event, the easier it is to get an accurate location. Smaller events are hard because you can't hear them. They're just too small, too far away. So that is improving. It takes money to do this. The state does need to install more of these devices. The state of Ohio has has 12 brand new devices on order. I just found out yesterday that they're hoping to get soon to start setting these things up around the state. This is all very cautionary and very good for everybody because you get a lot of good information. And we can't at this time say it's good or bad. All we can say is we're collecting information on this.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the central question that most Oklahomans have, you know, again, small shakes, you know, those are one thing. Big shakes are another thing. Is there any sign that these could trigger big earthquakes, like really major damage earthquakes? Is there anything that in your study that suggests that that's possible?
We had not seen it in the study. We were unable to find any very large events. Obviously, the Prague, Oklahoma being the big one on this, and that's still being studied. So we're not sure that was a fully induced event, or if it was partially, what were the conditions?
Yeah. What about using these techniques in areas where there are major fault lines? Are these earthquakes a different type of earthquake than, say, along coastal America, where the plates are rubbing against each other? Are these a different type of earthquake?
The entire country, the rocks, there is a, if you want, a field of stress over the whole country.
Sure. Okay. Mid-continent, where Mid-continent. New Madrid happened in the
right.
early 1800s, a major earthquake, but they don't happen often.
No, it doesn't happen often. And because of that, you don't know all the conditions underneath. Now, it'd be good to calculate it. And when you look at the map, like we've included in our report, it says, it's bad in certain places. Well, it only means that there's data in certain places. The data sampling isn't really good. Okay, so a very good map over the whole country has not been constructed. Now, with that goes faults that are deep-seated on that, just like the basement rocks here. And there are fault systems that go with that. And so there's a fair amount of shear. And when that's already there pushing, all we need to do is release that a little bit, and then the shear itself will go. So the water going in the ground, be very clear, does not lubricate the faults. It's pore pressure that eases the pressing together of the two, which there reduces the coefficient of friction, and it slips.
Mm.
So that's a big difference. What that is and what it's like in different places, that is not fully worked out.
Mm. Well, sounds like there's a lot of work yet to be done on
yes.
this. And it sounds like it's ongoing, and there are papers being published every few months on this, too. So we're learning more very quickly.
That is very true.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with your work. Donald Clark, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Donald Clark is a consulting petroleum geologist who teaches at the University of Southern California and served on a National Academy of Sciences and Engineering's Committee on Induced Seismicity Potential in Energy Technology, looking at possible links between earthquakes and energy production. He'll be giving the Petroleum Geologist Distinguished Ethic Lecture today at noon at the Alan Chapman Activity Center on the University of Tulsa campus. That lecture is free and open to the public. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.